Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
I know this program is 70 over 70, but I really wish I were younger. I wish I were 70, but I am ready.
I'm 72 years old.
I'm 75, miraculously enough.
I am 83 years old.
I am 88 years old.
You know, I'm here at 92.
I'll be 94 in May.
I'm 101 years old.
My name is Konai Helu-Thaman. I'm 75 years old, and I live in Suva, Fiji. Today, I think of myself as a Tongan poet who happens to be an English teacher. I actually came to discover how important my own heritage was. I started writing poetry in the Tongan language, desperately trying to help my English students. I was born and raised in Tonga. It was one of these typical Pacific household where everything was in Tongan. We spoke Tongan, we wrote in Tongan. But I happened to pass the exam to enter the only English-speaking high school in the whole country. At school, everything was in English and you were punished for speaking in Tongan. And so I was terrified to even open my mouth in case I made a mistake. English literature, I just found very boring. At school, we had to study the poem Daffodils by Wordsworth. But there were no daffodils in Tonga. I didn't know what daffodils looked like. It's just totally meaningless. But I studied hard, and it paid off. I got this scholarship to go to a university in New Zealand. And many years after that, I was asked to teach English to my old high school. When we started to look at the poetry section, I realized my English students, they were just so bored. They couldn't relate. They didn't understand what it was all about. I knew exactly how they felt. It dawned on me that the English had not invented poetry. And given our cultural history, my goodness, couldn't even imagine the amount of poetry that was around us. I wanted to use Tongan images to teach basic notions of poetry to my class. So I started writing all these verses, and it suddenly made sense to them when they read my poems and they come across a flower called the helala. It's a tiny little flower, but the fragrance is so powerful. You know, then they will understand how rich, culturally they are. Today, I have 5 collections of poetry that have been published, and my poetry is quite popular among Tongan students because what I write about is about them, it's about us. We as a community have not valued our own languages. A lot of our history, a lot of our indigenous knowledge were just regarded as useless, and therefore everything was done to delete all of that knowledge from us. But Tongan knowledge is so, so important. It's to do with your self-confidence. If you don't know your own culture, how can you have confidence to learn who you are?
That was Kanai Helu Thaman, and from Pineapple Street Studios, this is 70 Over 70, a show about making the most of the time we have left. I'm Max Linsky. My guest this week is David Crosby. You know David Crosby. He's a rock star. And for a long time, he lived hard. He reached incredible heights. He was in The Byrds and Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. He's been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame twice. He's seen things and done things that most of us can't even imagine. He's also bottomed out. A bunch. He spent 9 months in a Texas prison. He fell out publicly with nearly everyone he's ever played with. In 1994, he almost died from liver failure. And for much of his life, by his own admission, he was an angry guy. But something softened David. He got sober, except for smoking the pot he grows in his backyard. He rebuilt his family. He's making music he loves. And he's at peace with the ways his body is starting to fail him, even if it's threatening the thing that makes him happiest. I wanted to know what it took to get there and what he had to let go of before he could appreciate what he's got. David Crosby is 80 years old. David Crosby, thank you for doing this.
It's a pleasure, man.
It's a pleasure to have you, and it's a particular pleasure to have you right now. You just released your 8th album in 8 years.
Is that true? Yeah, I guess it is. It's a bunch.
It's a bunch.
Well, it's worse than you think, because I just finished another one.
Before you were 72, you'd had 3 solo albums, and now you've done, we'll just call it a bunch. Since you were 72, where did that come from?
I think it's a variety of reasons. I had songs. The latter part of Crosby, Stills, and Nash wasn't a happy time, and so I wasn't really willing to go in and record anymore with Graham or with Crosby, Stills, and Nash. I didn't feel that it was a welcoming circumstance.
Do you mind if I ask how come?
Marriages like that, you know, I think you should give Crosby, Stills, and Nash credit. We lasted much longer than most relationships do. 1969, you know, that's a long time to make music together. But those relationships, you know, look, lives don't go in parallel paths, man. They just don't. You're always either converging or diverging from your friends. And for a long time, we grated on each other's nerves. You know, we were all strong people, and we had, I'm a very opinionated guy, and towards the end there, we weren't friends, you know, and that is what I like to make music with, is friends. A long time ago, man, I found out a wonderful thing. I wrote Wooden Ships with Paul Kantner and Stephen Stills, and it taught me a lesson, which is the other guy always thinks of something you didn't. And writing with other people is fun. Now, most of my compatriots in this business don't feel that way. They want all the money and they want all the credit. And it's very important to them. I want all the songs. I want great songs. And so I am perfectly willing to write with other people. Yeah. And I have found it to be a joy. Now, what's happened to me, man, is major blessings. One was my son, James Raymond. He is a spectacular musician, primarily a keyboard player, but a writer. And he's probably my best writing partner.
For people who are listening who don't know the story, when did you meet James?
Okay, a lady that I was with told me she was pregnant, she was going to have the child. And I said, oh, please don't. And she said, I'm going to. And I said, okay. So when he was married and about to have his first child, his parents who raised him said, you should know what the genetics are. You should find out who your father and mother are. So he found his mother and found out who I was and said, nah, couldn't be. and I knew that it was a real one. Somehow I knew that one, I'd gotten others that were bullshit.
You'd gotten fake kid letters?
Yeah. I know where your son is. I'll tell you if you get me a recording contract.
And you just knew that this one was real?
I knew this one was real. I knew. And I followed it up, and he wound up doing a wonderful thing, man. Normally, those meetups go very badly. He walked in and gave me a clean slate and let me earn my way into his life. And that's one of the kindest things anybody's ever done to me. We wound up being very tight. I mean, we're very close. It's a kind of an odd relationship because he's the grown-up and I'm the kid. There was a rumor I was going to grow up, but it didn't pan out. but anyway, he and I write together spectacularly well.
What an incredible gift that is.
Yeah. I figure, man, I must be one of the luckiest. Can I say motherfucker?
You certainly can.
Okay, I figure I'm one of the luckiest motherfuckers alive. That's honest to God, I really do.
I mean, a son that you don't know exists contacts you in what? He was in his 30s?
Yeah. And he'd already been a musician for like 20 years, and he was a blazing keyboard player when I met him.
Right. Turns out he's good. I mean, imagine if he wanted to play with you all the time and he sucked.
Yeah, that would be bad. But he's really good.
But he's really good. And you guys have this musical connection that's like kind of a storybook or something.
It is, and it's ridiculously short end of the odds, man. The only thing you can figure is that I am exactly what I said, an incredibly lucky human being. I mean, I was supposed to be dead 20 years ago anyway. Here I am, you know. It's like,
you know, I was reading through your story, and that is actually true.
Yeah, it is.
It's kind of miraculous you're still here.
Yeah, that's how I feel about it. And it's one of the reasons that I'm trying so hard to do as much work as I'm doing. The way I look at it is this, man. Okay, I'm going to die. I've got 2 weeks or 10 years. I don't know. What I do know is that the thing that counts is what I do with that time. Okay? Now, I've got one way that I can contribute. Music is a lifting force. It makes things better. And I can do it. And I feel strongly that whatever time I have left, since I've been given incredible luck, you know, I owe it to the world, man, to give back as much as I possibly can with this tool that they gave me.
You know what you just said, how you make the most of the time you have left, that's literally like the tagline of the show.
No shit, really?
Yeah, that's it.
Because that's truly what I believe I should be doing. And that's what I am trying to do.
So you feel like you found the purpose, you found the thing, you're doing exactly what you should be doing.
I do feel exactly that, and I think it's way against the odds. I don't think most people ever have a clear, you know, feeling like that. I think most people are kind of lost and don't really have a direction and don't really have anything they believe in as strongly as I believe in this. And it gives you purpose, and that's good.
I mean, I think it's more than good. There's this aspect of it that I have to ask you about, which is that I've heard you talk in the last year or so that, you know, you've got issues with your hands.
Yeah, I do.
It's tendonitis, is that right?
Yeah.
And you're losing your ability to play guitar.
Yes. Yes, I am.
If making music is your purpose, if that is the thing that you want to do with the time you have left, what is it like to be losing your ability to do it? Like I read somewhere that you said you're 20% of where you were, but it's declining rapidly.
I've lost probably 10-15%, and I will lose it all. You know, I still think I'm lucky, man. I got to play for 50 years, and I know people who are... I got a really good friend, man, who just got diagnosed with Parkinson's. I've had friends commit suicide because they were faced with dementia and loss of ability. I think, you know, I can still sing and I can still write. I just made what may turn out to be one of the best records of my life. And yes, my hands are going, and yes, that's sad, you know, but I've seen really good friends of mine all around me have much worse to deal with. And I wish it weren't happening. Yeah, sure. I wish my age weren't happening, man. I wish that I had another 100 years, because I'm having a blast. I love my family. I love my job. I've got a wonderful home. You know, it's not big, but it's really a pretty place.
Yeah. How will you know when it's over with your hands?
You know, I play every night to try and stretch it out as long as I can. I keep guitars right next to the bed. There's some on the wall, another one on the stand.
So you think playing more will allow you to play longer? It's not like you're like a pitcher in baseball and you got to conserve your hours.
No, no. You keep trying to play and you stretch it out as long as you can because it's fun, man. Well, at a certain point, man, I won't be able to play and successfully. And I will probably give a lot of these guitars to young guitar players who will then get to play something really good. Mm-hmm. Some of them I'll sell because they're worth a whole lot.
But it's something you'll know. It's not like someone you play with will say like, David, I got to tell you, like, you're not there or something. You'll know it yourself.
They wouldn't be unkind to me, man. But my friends don't butter my toast. They tell me what, because that's why they're my friends. You know, we don't bullshit each other about that. Music's too important to bullshit each other about it.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today. Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
The way you were talking earlier about feeling lucky, does that feel new to you? Because my understanding is that for some significant portion of your life, that wasn't where you were at.
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, I nearly died, man. Came real close. And what happens to you is you get real grateful for being here. When I had that transplant, the doc said I was about a week from dying. They just caught it.
Can you tell that story for people who maybe don't know it?
Sure, yeah. I got hepatitis C off a needle. I used to be a junkie. And it destroys your liver. So after a few years, it destroyed mine. And then we realized that I was very sick, and we went to UCLA, and they said, you got to have a transplant, your liver's gone. And they got me a transplant. The first time they had a liver for me, it turned out to have a tumor in it. So they were really cutting it close. When they got another one and were able to transplant me, I was just about to die. And what happens to you when you almost die? It changes you.
Yeah,
you look at things a little differently. And I am grateful. I am in love with my wife. I'm in love with my son. I love my family. I'm having a blast making music. Is still just a complete joy, man. We had so much fun.
So that moment's 1994, first transplant doesn't work. You're waiting for a second and you're close. Did you have regrets then? Like, did you?
Well, I was in a strange place. You got to understand, I felt like I was on an upswing because I had been, you know, an addict, and I beat it. I went to prison.
In Texas, yeah.
Yeah, not fun. That's the rottenest, most awful way to kick on earth in a jail cell. But I did, and I'm proud of it. I did it. So I was feeling pretty good about myself and thinking, okay, now I got to lose some weight, get myself working here, and get back on to doing my job. It all has a great deal to do with being, you know, able to make music. That's a huge gift.
Is there any tension between making music and the other thing you keep talking about, which is your family? Like, does one pull you away from the other?
There used to be more tension, you know, because I would leave to go on the road and I would leave my family behind. You can't take them on the bus. And, you know, they would miss me when I was gone and I would miss them when I was gone. And now, no conflict at all. If I do go and do any work, I'll just take my family with me.
That's the rule now.
Yeah.
Do you think you'll tour again?
Probably not.
How come?
A lot of reasons. The people who are going out now are doing it too soon. They're having to go out in total isolation. They can't take their wives with them or their family. They can't see anybody. They can't have any guests. And then they go to a hotel room where they are forbidden to go out. They stay in the room and have room service, and that's it.
Right. Do you feel like something got stolen from you, losing this time to tour?
Yes. Yeah. I love singing live, man. It's it's a really a joy to do, and I'm good at it. And I had to cancel 3 tours, and I think that would have been my last year that I had the stamina and the strength to go out and work all summer. I don't think I can do it now.
I'm sorry, David.
Yeah, me too.
What about the financial hit?
It's pretty bad, man. We had 2 ways of making money, right? Records and touring. And so then along comes streaming, and we don't get paid for records anymore. They're making billions. I wanted to be grateful that I could still earn a living playing live and pay the rent, take care of my family. Along comes COVID, and I can't.
Yeah.
So now I lost my 2 sources of income, both of them. So I was facing, you know, selling my guitars to not have to sell my house. I mean, it was pretty serious. And my friend Irving made me an offer on my publishing. And I took it, because that's the only resource I had.
This is probably like gauche or impolite, but like, I think I assumed you were pretty rich.
You were wrong.
Do people make that assumption? Am I like totally off base?
Sure.
There?
Yeah. No. If you go on the net, it says I'm worth $43 million. I freaking wish. I was down to the point where I literally was facing losing my home. What can I tell you? I only had 2 places to earn money, and they were both gone.
Yeah. And you were still basically living off the income you were bringing in.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have a big wad of money sitting in a bank someplace. I wish I fucking did, but I don't.
Should you?
No.
Okay.
No, nobody stole it. I spent it. Mostly on drugs. Yeah.
How much money do you think you spent on drugs in your lifetime?
Millions. Millions of dollars. Cocaine and heroin.
Jesus.
Sad. It is sad.
Yeah, I think there's 2 ways of looking at it, though, you know? I mean, it's sad. It also fits under luckiest motherfucker on earth, I think.
To have survived it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have regrets about it?
Sure.
Do you think about it, or is it just, it's like your story and that's what it is?
I think about it in the sense that it's time lost. The big loss there was time.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get it back. I wasted probably 10 years just trying to see how absolutely blasted out of my mind I could get, rather than trying to see how much work I could do.
Do you know why that's the path you went down?
Tough question. I don't know. I really don't know. I must have been unhappy about some stuff, but I don't know what it would have been. I've had a good life.
You seem good now.
I am now. It's really fun now.
You seem great.
I am pretty happy, man. I really am. I
do you feel like you've ever been happy like this before?
I was happy before, but I you know, I was also kind of erratic and also, you know, doing stuff that was damaging. I'm not doing anything that's damaging now. I smoke pot, but that doesn't do any damage. It's really kind of nice.
Is it weird at all? Is it surreal at all to have pot legalized?
It's a relief, because we grow our own. You know, we have a garden out and back, and we grow, you know, a few plants. And they're nice. They're pretty ladies, and we take care of them, and then we harvest them. We just did a harvest. It was really good.
What's it been like for you, not just getting older yourself, but seeing all these, like, contemporaries of yours, all these, like, legendary rock stars, faces of counterculture? What's it been like to watch all these guys get old?
Well, everybody handles it differently, you know. Can't all be Keith Richards. Keith's handling pretty well.
Yeah, he's done all right.
Yeah. I think some people get more crotchety and more full of themselves and, you know, more pompous the older they get, and some people handle it gracefully and are really a lot of fun. Bonnie Raitt leaps to mind. Bette Midler leaps to mind.
What about how that interacts with, like, politics? Because my sense is that politics are still critically important to you. Like, looking at your Twitter, it's a lot about what is going on in the world. You've got very strong views that my sense are, like, quite similar to where they were 40 years ago.
Yeah, I have pretty much the same value system that I had. It's getting a little more sophisticated, but, you know, yeah.
And is that true for the people that you were coming up with?
Yeah, politics is what's going to happen to you tomorrow. Politics in this country is a desperate situation. The global warming thing is real, okay? It's absolutely fucking real. And we can't do anything about it because people who are indebted to the coal and oil, you know, end of the world are hanging us up. If we don't solve the problem, if we don't get off fossil fuels, and if we don't figure out some way to do carbon capture, this isn't going to be a survivable place in just a couple of generations. So politics right now is life and death.
Yeah. I mean, I got two little kids. I think about it all the time.
You should.
If politics is what's going to happen to us tomorrow, not to be crass about it, but you're not going to be here tomorrow at some point.
No, but I have kids too, same as you.
And do you think that you're leaving the world better than you found it?
I think I'm trying.
Mm.
But I think currently we're failing. Because we are allowing people who are too stupid to understand what the danger is to impede our progress. And that can result in the death of the human race.
There's just a part of me when faced with that like just wants to curl up in the fetal position under the couch.
There is part of me wants to do that too, but I'm a fighter, man. I'm not going to do that.
Do you think about dying?
I do.
Are you scared of it?
Yeah, sure.
I've talked to all these people for the show, and most of them answer that question very differently.
I think most people want to give you the impression that they're brave and that they're not afraid of it. I can handle it. And I think they're lying. I think everybody's afraid of it. Being afraid shouldn't make you unable to do anything. Okay, so I'm afraid of it. So what? I still am here, and I'm still able to sing, and I still have a family, and it's a sunny, beautiful day outside. So, you know?
Can you articulate what you're scared of?
The end of being able to be here. I like it here. I've fought through a lot of stuff to get here. And I like it. I like my life. I like my family. I like being alive. And I don't want to give it up.
Especially because you're such a lucky motherfucker.
That's how I see it.
I just want to be
70 Over 70 is a production of Pineapple Street Studios, and it's produced by Jess Hackle. Our associate producer is Janelle Anderson. Our editors are Maddie Sprung-Kaiser and Joel Lovell. Research and additional reporting by Charlie Locke. Our mixers Elliot Adler and Jenna Weiss-Berman and I are the executive producers. Our theme song is Like a Dream by Francis and the Lights, and the music you're listening to right now is by Arthur Russell, who would have been 70 this year. Original music by Terrence Bernardo, additional music by Noble Kids, and music licensing by Dan Kanishkawi. Our cover art is by Myra Coleman, who's 72, and our episode art is by Lynn Staley. She's 74 now, and she's also my mom. Special thanks to Beandria July and Gabrielle Lewis. Thank you, Konai Haley Thaman, and thank you, David Crosby. I'm Max Linsky. Thanks for listening. It's a wild and gone.
It's a lovely.